It is Wednesday, the 23rd of February. This is episode 78 of Digital Outbox. Welcome along. On tonight's episode, we are going to be talking about the how Apple are evil. We're going to be talking about how androids are not quite as shapely figure-wise when you take their clothes off. And we're going to be talking about how rubbish Microsoft are. And joining me along for the ride is Ian.
Good evening. That almost sounds like our default podcast list. I'm going to write that in the show notes and the template because that's going to be every week from now on.
Can you record that bit of voice and then just replay it at the beginning of each one, please?
Undoubtedly.
Thank you very much. So let's crack on. Let's have a look at the Android market share, which we talked about briefly last week. And we were talking about an amazing figure of, it was about 800% growth, was it? But it's not all it's cracked up to be.
Well, but I guess we need to be careful. It's back to all that old statistics nonsense. That is correct from a sales point of view. So there was a chart out today that showed that I think iPhone 4 is number 6 in the UK popularity, you know, in sales wise right now, and the first 3 spots are all HTC Android phones. So it's definitely Android is the biggest selling platform, but it's just a different way of looking at it in that.
It was 800% growth, wasn't it? But that was 800% growth from pretty much zero. And therefore, it made it look an awful lot better than when you actually look at the actual share that they've got.
Shares still good, but if you look at I'm just looking at this. It's a UK based research from IHS, and they reckon it's $102 million was the estimated revenue round about the Android market. So this is just round about apps they're talking around. But that's up. I mean, that's up from 11 million the year before. So still, that is a really good growth.
So looking at marketplace sales, Apple is still king of the hill, which shows in their
1.7 billion in 2010, which is, I think that's why there's this perception that iOS users are quite happy to buy content and Android users aren't, which I don't tend to believe. I think it's just the a lot of the magazine content is sitting on iOS that's not on Android yet.
No, I mean, I tend to agree. I mean, I've spent less on my phone so far than I have on my old Apple, but then I had it for longer. But then I think some of the novelty's worn off for people, and I think a lot of people are getting Androids after they've had an iPhone, and they know now which apps they need and which ones they don't. And actually, most of the ones we actually end up needing and using every day don't actually cost you anything. And the other ones now are just going to be a tick on. And it's, Apple have so many blooming handsets that it's, that tick on for them is pretty huge.
And I think for iOS, and I think for a certain extent Android as well, the market or the app market is very mature. There's if I look at my front page, it's very rare for something new to now appear in there. Kind of got my set apps, and every so often there'll be so I've moved over to OmniFocus at the weekend, and that's now appearing. That's on my front page of apps, but that's just replacing something else. There's not a big change in that. It's fairly static.
Yeah, so maybe we're seeing a slightly slower in the innovation stakes, which obviously makes a intrigue. Excuse me. Sorry about that. Intrigue, and just wanting to find out and see these new features in action. Can make you buy something, but actually, maybe we've seen, until really new hardware specifications come along, maybe we've seen as much as we're going to see.
Yeah.
I doubt that, to be honest, but,
So you're, just while we're talking Android, you're obviously a new Android purchaser we've just discussed. You're, what, 3 weeks in? 2 weeks in?
I don't even know if it's that long, but maybe
a couple of blog posts in anyway.
Yeah, a couple of blog posts in to my ownership. So yeah, if you are thinking of moving from iPhone to Android, I am currently writing a series of posts on what it feels like to do such a thing.
also called the worm that turned.
So I've had a post on the kind of the hardware And I've had a post on the kind of infrastructure which I've set up around my phone, away from the iOS sort of stuff that I've been used to. And then we're going to be going on to have a look at the applications and settings and how it actually feels to use an Android. So that's what's coming up next. So keep an eye on the blog for that. But yeah, I'm still enjoying my phone.
Good.
And obviously, when I've sort of got through the blog post, I think I'll give it a full review as to what it, you know, and on, you know, more than a kind of initial impression I want to give. I'd rather give you the what it actually feels like. So I'm going to wait a bit for that.
Excellent.
Very nice. So Android doing things quite well, but Microsoft seem to have screwed up in a big way.
An absolute cluster. No, I can't.
Yes, one of them. A fudge. they have released their first update for their Windows Phone 7, which didn't really go to plan, I think it would be fair to say. So they started rolling out the updates, but it turns out that some Samsung handsets were actually at best screwing up, having to have a hard reset, and at worst absolutely being bricked by the update, which one of the features of Windows Phone 7, which was supposed to be better than Android, was the fact that they were keeping this a tight-knit, hardware-restricted, very specific parameters type arena, so that none of these problems happened. But it looks like at their first attempt it's gone wrong, which is a shame. And if you're a Samsung owner who has now got a bricked phone, I'm sure you're not happy.
And seeming like Samsung Omnia handsets, so I don't know how many, you know, Windows handsets that Samsung have produced, but if you've got a Samsung Omnia, I think the worst thing is this update wasn't to bring new functionality, it was to prepare for the future update, which brings
it was
new functionality.
To give it a better updating process, wasn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
Which, I mean, I feel sorry for them in that it's gone wrong, maybe it's, you know, I guess you were all going to have teething problems, but that does seem.
But the worst bit, reading this article on ZDNet, it says the problem seems to occur at stage 6 of 10 of the update process. It just sounds like, what are you doing? Why is there... why is there stages?
They're talking about it's bricking firmware, so if it's bricking firmware, it must be doing quite a lot of business in the background.
Yes. So it fails at stage 6 of 10 of the update process, where the handset reboots after the update. Instead of rebooting properly, it throws up an error message.
So yeah, so basically if you've got a Samsung handset, definitely don't upgrade. But I think they've pulled the update process now anyway, so if you haven't already updated, you're going to have to wait until they've sorted out the issues. I don't suppose that's going to bother you too much.
Well, to be fair, Microsoft's current response to the problem is to... It's told owners via its Twitter website, it's WinPhone Support, there's a Twitter handle, sit tight or take the handsets back to the store. That's the official advice from Microsoft.
Lovely.
Sit tight.
There are some tips out there about how if
there's
you
possible
are stuck
fixes
with a
as
phone,
well.
Yeah, there are some tips and tricks. So do a Google search for if you don't think your handset's been totally bricked, you can actually recover it with a factory reset.
I'll put that in the show notes for the potential zero listeners who have bought a Windows Phone 7, and it might be a Samsung, and who might have bricked it, and are possibly listening to us right now.
The intersection of those circles of users, the overlap is not very great.
No.
Right, so this is probably the biggest story of the week, and I think we've touched on this before, but it has now become reality that Apple is going to take a 30% share of all in-app purchases across their app store. But not only that, they are forcing application developers to have a subscription model inside of the application that must be subject to this 30%, and also telling them that price cannot be any more expensive in-app than it is elsewhere on the internet. For example, a subscription you can get on online elsewhere,
and you can't also link out.
And so, yes, you're not allowed to point to your website to take the payment through. It has to happen within the application.
So I must admit, over the week, my opinion has changed on this. So, I think I'd spoken to you you know, privately, which sounds like we had some insidious conversation at some point. I think we're just playing Halo. And as we were handing out some punishment.
Or being handed to...
handing out. Come on, okay. Team Awesome. I've said that in public now. Yeah, we can laugh at ourselves. Bring it. So the bit I couldn't understand about this was that this came out and I was livid. I was absolutely livid. It just seems like... It seems like the worst thing Apple could do. We've got total market dominance. Everybody's coming to a platform. We're making all this money. You know, so a previous story was just about how much money they make in the App Store. Let's stick it to them. Let's charge everybody 30%. If you want to use a subscription model, fine. We've supplied it, but you need this 30%. And straight away, I was thinking, well, you know, they're obviously focusing in on, and it first of all came out of that Sony e-reader. So they're focusing on books, and they talked about books and magazine publishers. But then we find, you know, music streaming's affected. And then you start to think, well, what about the other services like Dropbox and Evernote and Remember the Milk and all these other services that are charging for, you know, premium options, generally not via the app, but being bought on their website for some sort of premium service like Spotify. You know, and you just...
Spotify, the company who can't make ends meet as it happens, now Apple wants 30% of them.
So it's... And that was my initial gut reaction.
My gut reaction is this stinks.
Oh, it's not total evil.
You know, not necessarily from a consumer point of view to start with, but from a ongoing perspective, even the consumer's going to have to pay that 30% extra. So I think it stinks. So where have you moved to then?
Well, and the things that annoyed me as well were things like they're saying that as a company, you can't offer anything higher priced online than on the App Store.
And so which means that immediately the prices are going to go up 30%.
Yeah.
For everyone.
Or the suppliers are going to have to take a hit of 30%. But it's the practicalities.
30% is more than most people's profit margin, probably.
So let's take Amazon as an example. So just say Amazon do this. First of all, the App Store as it currently stands on the iPhone, the most purchasing options you can offer is 3,500. So your own inbuilt software can't offer more than 3,500 purchasing options. So how do they offer? You know, so straight away you're like, you've put a rule in place that you can't support. Think of the practicalities. You are an app developer. You submit Kindle app. I don't know how many. Just say, 100,000 books available? 200,000? Is somebody in Apple going to check all the prices on their website to make sure that in-app prices are the same? So how are they only going to police this? It just doesn't. It doesn't stack up. I don't understand what they've done. And this has happened before with Apple. They've put out they say it's not a change. I think that was the other thing that was a bit rich. they said this is not a change, but by the way,
it's not a change. It's been like this all along. But we have updated our docs.
Yeah, and let's point you to section 11.2. I think it was. Yeah, I'll point you to section 11.2, but we're kind of slightly worded differently. But it's not a change. Don't worry.
No change. Just different.
So I was, as I said, dead set against it. And then I started, I guess it was reading more into it. So if you take, for example, a newsagent, how much, and I never thought of it this way, if I publish a magazine, so if I publish Wired right now, how much goes to the newsagent that carries that magazine and how much goes to Wired? I've got to be honest, I've no idea. So I started trying to find that out because other people were quoting figures and it looks like for the popular magazines, it's round about 30%. For the smaller magazines, it can be as high as 50% is how much the actual newsagent will take. You know, so if they're selling, I don't know, I can't think of an unpopular magazine off the top of my head or a niche one. But, you know, if you take a niche one that's maybe not got a lot of people buying it, that can be up to 50%, which I guess then it makes me realise that's why they can offer, you know, Wired can offer things like, you know, subscribe and it's half price because they're cutting out the newsagent. They'll just send you it directly. They're still making money on that.
Yeah, I mean, most magazines are all ad supported anyway. Actually, the magazine person
they are, but it's
makes the money out of the adverts rather than.
I'm just going
off
back
the
to the
cover price.
All I'm trying to do is think about the, you know, if it's $3.99 in the shops for Wired, and I can subscribe and get it for $1.99. Is it such a bad deal to sell it at $3.99 in the App Store and Apple take that 30%?
I think the biggest issue, though, for me is not that that's an option within the App Store. Of course, you might, you know, of course you should offer that as an option. You know, give the developer a nice easy way of having in-app purchases, charge for that, and then it's up to the developer to choose. This is not choice. This is forcing.
Oh, absolutely.
The developer down the route. But not only that, it's influencing and forcing the rest of the market as well. If Apple had their way and everything pans out as it looks like they want it to, the market prices of every subscription that can go onto a mobile device will have to jump up by 30%, or the profit margins go down by 30%, and that's a huge chunk. I don't think I like any bit about it, really.
So part of me feels,
I mean, although it seems good for consumers in the first run, it won't be ongoing.
Part of me feels at the moment that I feel semi-content, that I think the options I've said aren't too bad. I think the 30% is too much. I can see it being in 6 months' time, they'll say, we've had it. And it's a bit like Amazon with the Kindle. When they first did the books, it's 70% goes to Amazon, 30% to the book publisher. And after 6 months, they flipped that round. And I wonder if this is Apple testing just how... I mean, and the other thing is...
I don't think there's anything wrong with that figure at all. There's nothing wrong with 30%.
I think there is. No,
there's nothing wrong with 30%. As long as that 30% is just to do with Apple's market. You don't force that outside of their ecosystem. They can say whatever... They can say 100% if they wanted to.
But I don't think they're not forcing it outside.
They're saying you can't have... It has to be as cheap, and therefore... It's influencing what will happen outside of the ecosystem and what a developer can and can't do outside of Apple.
But it's not forcing the price up 30%.
Well,
it's forcing the company to swallow. I will lose 30% on my iOS sales.
Subscription models now is a really important modern day business sort of direction.
No, absolutely.
Everyone's doing subscription model. You work out your subscription model based on your own percentages and costs. When another company comes in and says those costs have just increased by 30%, that's going to screw up those figures no end.
There was an article that came out that said that Apple had before they announced this, with their and they called it like their kind of tier one or their major partners on the iOS store, and the list included Amazon and a few other big names, that they'd had discussions already. And they seem to be fine with it. Whether that pans out, I don't know. The other reason I know that is the case is on day one of this announcement, there was three magazines already available offering subscriptions.
So Amazon are happy to give away 30%.
This is all just rumor. And I think time will tell.
Apple are rolling the dice because they're hoping that they are big enough that this isn't going to piss people off. Unfortunately, they are probably big enough to do that, but you just lose all of that goodwill.
I don't like the way it seems like another change, and it also seems like they're making it up as they go along. So they've put out this statement. It was then confirmed. People then were assuming it was digital content, but then a couple of things. So Rhapsody have turned around and said, we can't afford this. We're going to have to pull it up. There's no way we can support this price in iOS, and they're also talking about taking legal action, and there's been some talk about antitrust, but Apple doesn't have a monopoly on maybe in tablets right now, but that's going to change. But they're across the phone market, they don't have a monopoly anymore. I think if you rolled back 2 years, you could probably argue that on the smartphone market they probably did have a massive share, and that's so whether the changing market has allowed them to do something like this, I don't know. But then there was Readability have launched an app and launched a service, and Apple rejected their app because they didn't allow the same in-app purchasing, and it didn't so Apple aren't getting a 30%.
So yeah, this was the first rejection, wasn't it, based on this new thing?
It was the first rejection, but it was also rejection of and certainly Readability see it as we don't offer content, we're not a distributor. Now, people have said, well, you actually are, because you're taking other people's content, you're changing its form factor, and then you're giving it to people. You are distributing content, whether you like it or not. And also, their own pricing model they brought out was, give us $5 a month or whatever, and we'll take some of that cut and pass on 70% to the blogs that we are changing the content on. So they were doing a very similar thing to what Apple were talking about doing. So I think that one's a bit murky. But then, Allegedly, another one, Steve Jobs replied to an email and said that these only apply to publishing apps. But what is that? I don't, you know, publishing apps just seem so vague. And this has happened before when Apple started blocking like the fart apps. And then after 2 or 3 weeks, it says, no, that's somebody being overzealous in the review team. And I just wonder if this is going to be the same, that after a few weeks, it'll bed down into here is what we actually are saying. But I can't believe a company this size does this, that they put out a statement, they seem to play hardball with it, and then it kind of waters down. It's a few times this has happened.
Probably because they know that then they can chop, if they chop it down to 10%, suddenly everyone will go, all right then.
But what if they put it to 50?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I guess that's fair.
I think Apple and maybe are seeing, I don't know, this is a bit sort of preemptive probably, but they're seeing some of the signs that apps isn't the future of mobile devices. As much as there will be a place for an app, this particular kind of thing will see people moving more and more to HTML5 and it can offer. And because HTML5 can now nearly offer you, and it's certainly not as slick, it's certainly not as refined and all in place,
but a year
it's
from
getting
now,
more so every day.
A year from now, who knows where we'll be. And I mean, we've picked up, and I don't think we've said anything in the podcast about it, we've picked up Fitbits, which are American-only devices. And one of the things we were talking about was there's no app for it. But I think a couple of days just before we actually got our hands on them, they released a mobile version of their web browser. And it actually works very much like an app. It's very nice. Works on every platform. Yeah,
there's very little need for an app. It's still not as quick, and that's one of the issues, isn't it? But that's, again, that's data network issues rather than the actual technology. So we'll see what happens. But this kind of thing is certainly going to make developers think along those lines far more quickly than they probably would otherwise have done. I think so. Again, the days of apps for everything are coming to an end.
And it feels a very evil move. I think part of that is I certainly didn't appreciate just how the market works. I still don't, you know, from a magazine's cost, I don't understand the cost of a magazine, for example, or the cost of a book. I mean, one of the things I see people complaining about when it comes to Kindle books is, I love my Kindle, but why can I buy the paperback one cheaper than I can the Kindle version? Now, I know that's
I think that's getting less and less prevalent.
It is getting less, but generally, the guys that I work with, that is their first complaint, and it still is an issue, and it still kind of defies the logic of...
Well,
you know,
it's like the download music, isn't it?
You can buy tracks cheaper
on CD.
I know, but it's the to make the printed one, you need it electronic in the first place. And it just goes back to that. It just doesn't make logical sense.
Well, yeah, no. So you buy a CD album that's cheaper than buying the MP3 download of it. It's like Radiohead. Ridiculous. Is that...
I was a fool. I've just spent £33 in Radiohead, but never mind. To get the vinyl edition that I can't play. What a muppet.
It'll look good on your shelf, though. What a muppet.
Yeah.
So we're talking about the HTML5 and apps on the web, if you like.
I must apologise. I don't think we can make any conclusion there apart from rabbiting for 10 minutes. I think it sounds a sucky move, but I still think we need to wait some time just to let it settle.
I just think it's...
Nobody's pulled that up yet.
We might see it. Say, I think I made the point already, but I think they could solve everything by not forcing that thing that it has to be cheaper or has the same price as elsewhere. I think that's the thing I don't agree with.
I just don't think
they can do whatever they like other than that.
I don't think they can police it. I don't know how you can police something the size of like Kindle books. How do you police it to guarantee that everything's the same?
But that's not the point. The fact, you know, that's a bit like saying you can give your government any old power, because the chances are they can't police it, you know, but you shouldn't give them the power in the first place. So Google, I definitely say they're moving more and more into this kind of web arena, and they're very strong players in it, I think, for good reasons. And the long game, I think they see what needs to be done. And Google OnePass is another move into that arena. Now, I've not really come across OnePass yet, so do you want to explain it for me?
So they announced this the day after the kind of Apple officially announced their subscription service. And it's actually in some ways it's quite similar, but with a lot more flexibility. So you can use your, it's almost like a single sign-on, use your Google account details, sign on anywhere, and publishers can set up their own subscription options, their own payment options. The one thing that was not clear, they did this Google OnePass announcement. I think it was actually Schmidt, Herr Schmidt was on stage doing it all, giving all the good stuff. Never mentioned how much the cut was, but did say there was a cut. So in subsequent press briefings, they confirmed it was 10%. But again, it's very hard to find anything in writing. It's just reporters reporting that's what they've been told is 10%. So again, it's a bit like Apple. Why announce something so big and almost like keep the actual core details away? And it makes me think, is it a knee-jerk announcement to say we're a bit more flexible than Apple, and the details we'll work on? One thing also, they're definitely chasing after digital content providers, particularly magazines and newspapers. One of the key things for them is they want to understand who their readers are, because they sell ads. So they need to understand, you know, our demographics are, you know, 20 to 35 year olds, they're fairly affluent, all that kind of good stuff, which isn't so much for web usage. And it's one of the things that Apple have always kind of refused to pass on. I think Google to a certain extent had as well, but one of the things they've guaranteed is that publishers will be able to maintain direct relationships with their customers. So by default, Google will share your details. I think you can opt out afterwards. And one of the differences is Apple is saying, yes, magazine publishers can get those details, but only if the consumer says yes. And I gave that a little test. I've actually subscribed to T3. And when you subscribe, the first thing it says is, publisher would quite like your details. Do you want to share that? Yes or no? I think it's every subscription offer you get, or every subscription you sign up for, you can click on it and make that decision. So it's not
as
a universal.
I mean, that information is vital, really. And that's one downside of signing up to a service like this. If you can't guarantee that, you know, if you process those transactions and have those accounts on your system, you know all that information. It's great. And you can enforce what information you would like from someone to be able to subscribe.
Yeah. One other sneaky thing about the Apple one I noticed, it will automatically renew. So unless you keep a tab on what you're subscribing to, you could start to rack up the bills.
Have 20 subscriptions that you forgot to cancel.
You know, so if I take T3, you can say it was again, quite sneaky. It says 3 months, 6 months, or a year. It doesn't say number of issues, it's time. But if you don't download any issues in that time, you don't get any magazines.
Right. So you've got, it's all up to you.
So the back issues are there and you can download them later. But again, and also that was the thing I meant to say. I thought they would have brought an actual distribution platform with this as well. You know, so we'll send you the content. Nope. It's up to you to go and get it. You know, so I'm quite surprised even when they talk about things like the Daily. I thought that would have been pushed to you. You know, so you wake up in the morning a bit like the Kindle and my content's there and I can just go and read it. I don't have to do anything.
That's still the model that we were talking about before the tablets all came out.
Yeah,
wasn't
before
it?
iPad, we thought, yeah, you know, that's a killer feature.
Wouldn't that be good to have your newspaper delivered to you?
You know, I get Edge and Wired and an Empire delivered to me through the post. You know, and it's that same thing. If I picked up a tablet and there's my new edition of Edge, that can go and
still
read.
At least when you go and drag something, I guess it's ensuring that you definitely want to use that bandwidth rather than forcing something down a pipe that doesn't ever gets read or whatever. So there is that issue.
So I think this is a definitely good move by Google, because
it's a good move. And the difference is, I don't want to harp on too much about it, they've offered a service. They said, yeah, I will do. They've offered a service. They said it's 10%, take it or leave it. If you want to come on board, great. If you don't, you don't have to.
Yep.
That's the difference
and I think the key thing is they're definitely coveting publishers by saying we'll keep these direct relationships, which I think is one of the things that throughout the subscription debate on iPads has been one of the issues. You know, publishers do want to see it. And I meant to say, Daily's also confirmed that this spring it's coming to Android. So when Daily launched, they actually said next year before Android, and that's obviously changed very quickly.
Yeah.
Very quickly. But I think that's just the number of tablets that are coming out. You know, you just have to look at CES and you look at that mobile show last week. It's just all tablets, all Android.
Yeah, it's very easy for a manufacturer to put their device out and get an operating system on it nowadays through Android. So yeah, we've seen a lot of making use of it. Kindle publishing.
Yep. And,
so we're sort of this has been a podcast of cuts. I should have said that. While the government's cutting everything, we're also concentrating on cuts. So Kindle,
including our quality. The this was just a little tidbit I picked up while I was trying to look into magazine costs and how much it actually, you know. So when somebody sells a magazine, what does it take? Who gets what cut? And it was interesting that at the same time a PC Pro article had come out just around about Kindle publishing. And it was how much Amazon charges for delivery. Now, this is delivery over 3G. They don't charge for Wi-Fi delivery.
This is their WhisperNet, what they call it.
But it's 10p per meg, which explains why magazines and newspapers that are available in Kindle don't have images. Because they're it just blows their size massively. And then they would just make no money. So again, it was just back to that. It was just back to that, an interesting little thing, because it's again not usually talked about.
No, that is quite interesting. So, I mean, it doesn't sound a lot, 10p per meg, but I guess it does stack up, doesn't it?
Well, if I take a typical PDF magazine, is maybe 40-50 meg, which explains why, and it also explains why they're not getting delivered, but also makes me think I've been in my head thinking, oh, colour Kindles will come this year, and imagine get your magazines in a colour Kindle, and then you're like, aha.
Still on text because they can't afford to send it to you.
And fair enough, it might be when that comes, it's Wi-Fi only, for that delivery.
Yeah, I wonder whether they're going to put, I mean, the whole point of the 3G and the keeping it simple is that you don't have any of those restrictions,
I know.
You choose a 3G, it kind of syncs all its stuff in the background.
Well, I'm amazed as well that the amount of people I've told that Kindle's 3G is free, and they're like, what do you mean free? It's free forever. And they're like, oh?
Yeah, well, someone's paying for it, and it's clearly the
but it's just that they're not getting that message over, that you can get, content delivered to you, and that for you is free, apart from paying for the actual newspaper.
Yeah,
very nice.
That's good. A little story that I crept in here. So the Chrome's released their new sort of beta release of their browser. Google have released their beta release of I've got that all mixed up, haven't I? All the words were in there somewhere. Can everyone just rearrange them?
The best thing is you're giving me the puppy dog eyes, like you're going to cut that out, aren't you? No.
No. Leave that for the users, the listeners, to rearrange them. Yeah.
Evening users.
It's late. It's gone 9. Right. So, yes, they released their new beta version anyway, and they've little subtle changes, like now the options come up in its own tab. So instead of a little pop-up window with the options in it now, it kind of includes it as a tab option. And it feels very natural and very like another step towards their kind of operating system in a browser, basically. So I'm sure they're using their Chrome OS experience now for the releases we're getting. Also a few other bits and bobs, but I haven't got them listed here, so I can't remember them off the top of my head. But they are also talking about the future of Chrome, and they're trying to work out a way of getting rid of the permanent address bar, which seems a little bit mad for a browser, but they're trying to recover those extra 30-odd pixels to give you some more vertical height. So they've come up with some ideas, including whacking it in one of its tabs, but it's not permanently on the screen. So we'll see. But it sounds interesting. Browser without an address bar.
One thing you've not mentioned is speed. And I mean, you probably run multiple browsers. I know probably because of your job, you're running multiple browsers all the time. And I tend to run two, Safari and Chrome. With Chrome is always my kind of secondary one. But I've switched Chrome just because of certain key extensions now, and just also stability and
speed. I think it's the V8 engine, isn't it? I think they call it their V8 engine.
Yeah,
something like that.
But there's no.
They've increased that again.
There's no. There wasn't too much difference, I felt, between Safari 5 and the last version of Chrome. This new one, you just notice it just a lot snappier. And I'm sure Safari 6 will come out at some point this year. And I'm sure it'll come along with Lion. They'll be doing some, here's Safari 6 and here's some great new things, and it'll be a little step ahead again because they just play all these games. But I'm loving Chrome right now.
You should go back to Firefox and see what a world away that is now. Unfortunately, they're still rock solid on the developer tools, but they're slow.
The new Firefox beat us fast.
I don't think I've got a beta version, so maybe that's worth
stick the latest beta of 4 on. I think it's at beta 10 or 11.
All right, then. Scrub Firefox from that and insert IE7, which I still have to use. So then you'll see slow.
Yes.
And doesn't work.
I won't mention IE6, which some of us still have to use.
Well, I'm not going to... I'm saying nothing.
It's okay, I've just slipped my wrists.
HTC Flyer. Tell me about that.
I wish Henry was here, because we've got a sound effect if he was here.
What from Henry?
Whoosh! Or something.
That was pretty good.
Yeah.
Very impressive. It's almost as if he was in the room.
Well, the chair would be empty. The HTC Flyer. This is a bit of an odd one. It came out of that mobile show last week where there was just loads of stuff getting launched.
Mobile Congress, was it?
In Canada, I think. It's a 7-inch Android tablet. Interestingly, not running Honeycomb, but it's running Gingerbread. But the key difference with this is it's running HTC Sense on top, and it's coming with a pressure-sensitive stylus. So, I mean, stylus have kind of died, apart from my use of them on the iPad.
Yeah, it's interesting that you've rekindled that whole thing, and
it's all down to me. I wrote to HTC and said, "Look, I've got a great name for a tablet. Call it the Flyer and stick a stylus on it. It'll sell. It'll sell like the bucket load."
For all the effort that Apple have gone to make sure you don't need a blooming stylus, you're all reinvigorating it.
That's fine if you've got a bony finger. I've got my fat digits and it just doesn't work as well.
See mine.
I didn't know why I mentioned you. I can never work out if you're on widescreen. but I digress. The thing that was also good about this, design-wise, very iPad-esque. You know, it was an actual aluminium unibody. You know, so it wasn't...
Smaller, though. Small.
Smaller, but...
Only 7 inches.
Yeah, but it actually picked up a lot of press. And it was a lot of people's favourite tablet. And I think having a stylus on there, and especially a pressure-sensitive one, is very nice.
They were showing how you can sort of, say, interact with the device, writing notes on all sorts of different things, and it will obviously store it. You could draw and all those kind of nice things with it. HTC Sense on top of the Honeycomb looked nice. They'd turned into a kind of a 3D interface. So you can switch different screens by just sort of, and switch apps by just swiping, and it kind of turned it all into a cube. There were bits in there that which I thought were a bit pointless, like it kind of changed angle depending on what angle you were holding at the device at, and all sorts of strange things. And also a lot of things were apparently not working because of low battery, which sounds utter tripe. You weren't allowed to touch it as a journalist, it looked like, from the conference.
That's the worst thing about these shows. I mean, it's the same with the Zoom. So anybody that went to CES, there's a Zoom. It's coming out in a month's time, and we're not even going to let you hold it. We will hold it for you while you... Oh, and you can't touch it because it's a video of the interface it's playing, not the interface itself. And it's like, what?
I mean, a lot of journalists get hacked off with that. But the fact is that a lot of journalists nowadays, although they think or they believe that they will give something a fair go, so much rides on these devices in that initial, you know, day, 2 days worth of media coverage.
When you're at CES next year, you'll be hacked off when you can't prod and touch.
You're right. I would be hacked off. But the thing is, they're a victim of their own hysteria over devices and bugs and things. There probably are people out there that can cope with that. But let's say there's plenty of people willing to write something off after one use of an early beta product. And that's it. That can kill the buzz.
Good point, well made.
Thank you. Right, Plex for Windows. It sounds good. Now you're the Plex man.
Yes.
Tell me why I should be excited.
I'm not as excited about this anymore. So sorry. Next story.
I built you up, man.
that Plex did two announcements last week. The first was that an Android client had come out. So if you've got an Android phone or tablet, you could fire up Plex on your Android and watch content being served by the Plex media server, which was only Mac based. But then the next day it says, by the way, we've also got Plex media server for Windows.
So you can store and distribute your content from a Windows machine.
Yes. But it doesn't come with a window. It doesn't come with a front end. So on the Mac, you've got the Plex front end as well, and that is seemingly missing from the Windows side. And I don't know if that's something that in, you know, 4 months' time. Because what me rather excitedly was like, well, sod having a Mac Mini with its DVD drive sitting under your telly. Go and buy a cheap PC. Make sure it's silent. Make sure it's got a Blu-ray player. And that is the best.
And there were those boxes device. Out there, same device size and shape as the Mac Mini.
Pretty much.
That had the Blu-ray device in.
I had the Blu-ray device, and I think my only worry was always things like noise, because I can't hear the Mini. You know, and I would hate to be watching something and either a fan kicked in or it started doing the old stutter, because stuff like that just kills it for me. You know, I can watch 1080p on that Mac Mini, and it's not even a new Mac Mini. I can watch 1080p on it, and it's flawless. And I'm very sensitive to things like even like one drop frame. It's just like, oh, that
it bugs me. It bugs
you know,
me.
It's just it's just a total jarring. Like, and I know some of the listeners probably think, what an arse, but it's just stuff like that just jars. And it's just like, nope, can't watch this now. What happened there? So, but it was a shock. I didn't even know this was in development. I think they kept it very well hidden. So
I might have a dig around, then keep up to date with it and see what happens, because I haven't got a media serving device.
And the media server itself, the actual scrapers and the actual detection of what the media is and the downloading the content works so well now. You know, it's just you can throw anything on there and it gets it right. It's so impressive.
My problem is I buy all my media.
Yeah, but even ripping it, you know, so I've ripped my West Wing DVDs. So yeah, boo.
Love a bit of West Wing.
Yes.
Right. So we're going to introduce a quick feature where we're going to look at what may be coming up next week if everything goes to plan. So upcoming next week, we are going to be hopefully talking about the Nintendo 3DS, which launches in Japan on Saturday.
Yeah.
Exciting.
Yes, definitely. I still can't see me buying one, but... It's definitely it's yet again Nintendo breaking new ground. You know, they're doing something that not none of the other console manufacturers are doing.
I do think, meh. I'd love to see one though. So, you know, just it ain't a purchase for me. We're going to likely to see, although we may have already seen due to leaks, new MacBook Pros.
Oh, yes.
I'm sure they'll look entirely different. Be entirely differently spec'd, and we'll have I'm not sure. I mean, basically, they're going to be spec increases, aren't they?
The reason I'm looking forward to these, no more goddamn rumors about MacBook Pros.
Yes, as soon as we've actually had the announcement,
Google Reader, relax over the last 10 days, it's just stop. Yeah. Rumors about iPad 2s, then rumors about MacBook Pros, then rumors about iMac, and rumors about Lightpeak, and then rumors that it's delayed. That's the iPad 2. The iPhone 4, iPhone 5 is delayed. And it's all these manufacturing reasons. And then rumours that those rumours were wrong. And it just went on and on and on.
But then iPad 3 did manage to sneak in there, as we touched on before. It's still circling around occasionally.
But I guess the interesting thing about the MacBook Pro is that Lightpeak, which was mentioned, I think, at the start of last year, and then seemed to just every so often get regurgitated, is actually appearing. So Intel confirmed that they're doing a press conference tomorrow about Lightpeak, which is now rebadged as Thunderbolt.
Is that definitely true? The Thunderbolt is the name.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I've no idea. But
and Lightpeak was is a device to device communication. Is that right?
Yep.
Fast USB kind of.
A lot faster than USB 3.
But with no devices that would support it at the moment.
So Intel have done the press conference tomorrow, so I think it's almost confirmed that, you know, Apple will be one of the first ones to use it. And it's not just an exclusive Apple technology, it's going to be available to everybody.
It's just going to depend on uptake, isn't it, basically?
Yes.
Okay, also we're going to have the Zoom launch on February 24th.
Tomorrow.
So that is tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yes.
So probably launch before we get this podcast out.
Okay, so it will have launched.
Yes.
Although they're not releasing it with Flash support, although that sounded pretty drastic, it's just going to be a download very, very shortly.
Yeah, so it's a download, and the adverts have now got a big asterisk, because it comes with Flash, Asterix a few weeks after launch. And so Adobe have actually said it is now a few weeks after, and we expect it to be available quite soon for the Zoom. One wag did say that, I bet you this is so the reviews have good battery life.
And I mean, that's cynical.
It's cynical, but probably damn true. Oh, because then, flash.
Did you see the
flash in my MacBook used to use up the battery?
Yeah. Mac is. I understand what you mean about flash being painful in Macs now. Yeah. It's rubbish. It's utter.
Well, I think the newer ones are better because they're starting to use some hardware support, which is
that's still rubbish on mine.
Oh, okay.
Have you seen that HP have announced some devices, or that's some laptops that are going to have 34 hour battery life?
I saw that today, actually.
So they're using solid state everything, so nothing's moving.
So you do have to buy specific versions of this laptop, and it's SSD.
Yes, and with a whopping great battery on it.
And it's a certain type of processor, and it's using Intel built-in graphics. But the combination plus the extended battery gives you 34 or 36 hours.
Yeah, 36, that's amazing.
Yeah, which is fantastic. You know, it's like for a business laptop, I can see loads of people, you know.
I mean, that's different league, you know, compared to 7. And that 7 is blooming good now.
Well, like if I take...
Most are like 3.5, 4.
Yeah, 3.5, 4 is like in my head as a standard. And then you looked at things like, you know, when MacBook Pros and MacBook Airs come out, they talk about a 7, and you're like, is it really 7, or is it more like 5.5? So to turn around and
7
say 36,
don't do anything really.
You know, you're guaranteeing, you know, you're like 24 hour flights. I don't need power.
Nope.
Fantastic.
Okay, so that is all our news.
No, you've missed one.
Oh yeah, we have.
Missed the big one. You did that deliberately, just so I could whinge. I saw you moving your cursor down. I was like, he's just teasing me now.
Yes, we have got the iPad 2 Apple event, which has been announced for March the 2nd, which is likely to, be after our next podcast. We're going to make sure that we've had that announcement out the door before we have our next podcast.
And not even subtle. Usually they'll do like an invite to the music event, and there'll be some play on words, and everybody will guess, what does that mean? What does it mean?
Have they just called it the iPad 2 event?
Well, no, they've got a... So it's March the 2nd. They've got a calendar with a 2 on it, the corner curled, and an iPad screen underneath. So
there you go.
it's kind of like it says all it needs to say.
There we go. All right, now we can move on.
And at least that'll be the end of all the iPad 2 rumors.
Yes. We've done very well to not report so many of them.
Well, we've got an unwritten rule. We try and not dwell on the rumors too much.
Yeah.
Because I think it's a good rule. Guff. At the end of the day.
Needy.
And this podcast isn't guff.
Ian, what's your pick this week, please?
This is an extension for Chrome, my new favourite buddy browser. And I think we talked about this maybe once or twice in a podcast before. Basically, Google have launched, it was when we were talking about Google search results not being as good as they were, and not being as good a quality, and all that kind of demand media type sites getting in the way, and you go and search for a product, you go and search for how do I do something, and you're getting these just mumbo jumbo websites coming back just full of gibberish. So this Chrome extension, the link's in the show notes, allows you to block domains being returned in your own search results. So it's only affecting your own searching. It's not a block this and everybody gets blocked. But if you do install it, it's also sending back those block site information to Google. And what they're going to start looking at is, are they getting enough response to actually say, you know, this website is actually, you know, we're getting, you know, 10,000 people are blocking this. We need to start deranking this from being...
Great stats, isn't it? That's great stats.
I think that's it. And they're saying it's out of all their... I think we talked about it when Bing were copying Google. And Bing talked about they've got 1,000 different signals that we use to go and work out the, you know, what's relevant. I think this will just end up being, you know, one of the ranking signals.
They've got to be careful of abuse of it, though, haven't they? You know,
so if you're in a company...
Distributed denial of a service attack, well, now go to Google
if you're in Yahoo, and they said, everybody go and block, I don't know, a certain company, go and block AOL from your search results.
Well, it'll become part of the business model.
20,000 people blocking it that day.
And if it's, say, it'll start being a business model of search engine optimizers to go and make sure that they de-rank things anyway. So there's something in it anyway. It sounds like a good idea, but whether it'll get abused like everything else gets abused.
But seeing if they don't, see if they take the view that it'll get abused, even if it's a case of that I can turn it off. So if I don't want results back from, Daily Mail, be gone, Daily Mail. But part of me feels that I need...
What a beautiful world. you've made my day.
I know. Even though it's dark, the birds are tweeting. the thing I will do is that I'm not going to run it. It is only a Chrome extension. And I think I would always have a browser available that didn't have blocked sites. And you can go and obviously unblock the sites you've blocked. But I think it does give me... What I now have is a Chrome Google search, which is starting to... I think I've blocked... Hold on. I've got about 15 sites blocked. And it's just okay. It's just the ones that I'm finding that's really noisy. I've never got anything back. Like Experts Exchange. I think we've all stumbled on that and thought, what a load of crud that
that's
is.
That's just... basically goes out, finds a question elsewhere and collaborates it all, but only in a way so they can sell advertising rather than actually offering you answers.
Be gone. I never need to see you again. And it's things like that I think I'm in control of that. If I don't want to see it, I don't want to see it. It's not good. I don't lose anything from it. On again.
So where do you just go to the extension library and search?
Yeah. I don't even know what it's proper. I don't know if
proper
it's just
name,
like,
isn't
yeah.
It?
I will, while you're doing your pick, I will go and have a look.
Okay. Well, my pick comes out of the fact that I've moved to T-Mobile since I've switched my iPhone to my Android. And criminally, I would say, they don't include calls to your voicemail in as part of your monthly allowance. So it's an additional cost to call your voicemail, which what? I didn't know about and I wasn't particularly happy with when I saw charges starting to appear for
That's
no
sneaky.
Apparent reason. So I did what everyone does and did a Google search for how to get around it. And I came across a service called Hello Mail, HULLOMAIL, which is effectively a third party voicemail, instant messaging or voice instant messaging service. And pretty much all I had to do was download an application, create an account, and that was it. It set up my phone to now use this other service is my voicemail, and their phone numbers are included in my monthly allowance, so I no longer have any additional charges. Their application works across all the major providers. I have no idea how well it integrates with iPhone, BlackBerry or whatever. But for my Nexus S, it was seamless. It did, literally just took 2 microseconds to set up, and now I've got visual voicemail basically, which I didn't have visual voicemail before. It was all cool, so it's great.
Very nice.
And it's free to create your account and use. The app is ad supported unless you want to pay about £3, and then you'll get a ad free app for a year. So you either way, it's great.
Two free picks. What more can you want?
What more can you want?
Personal block list by Google. So if you search for
personal block list,
if you search for personal block list and get that bad boy installed,
I might well do that. Actually, that sounds like a good
one. As I said, I think you still need a browser where it's clean and clear, just so you can
clean and clear.
Yeah, just so you're not blocking stuff that maybe is useful. Anyway, it's all good.
That is the end of our podcast. So if you would like to find out more about us, we are on the internet as digitaloutbox.com, and you'll find my Android posts as well as posts on our picks on the blog. So keep an eye there. You can email us info@digitaloutbox.com. We are on Twitter and Skype as digitaloutbox. Ian, where do you blog about yourself?
IanD.net, and I tweet as Sweeper.
And I tweet as CheesyUK. And that's it. So thanks for listening. We'll see you after the Apple event next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Do you sing the theme music in your head?
I actually, bizarrely, it's bod. I still can't lose Shaquille's bod in my head. So every week, instead of doing the digital outbox tune, I do.
Shaq, you're not here in person anymore, but you're still here in spirit.
Yeah, I should phone him right now and just sort of ask him to speak some words. Speak some words of wisdom.
Speak some words.
And he'd just be like, what are you on about, white boy? What are you talking about? That makes him sound like a racist, and obviously he's not. Because that would be controversial. There's no way to take that conversation.
No.
But no, I can't lose bod.
I still got stop it in my head.
No, it's definitely bod. My second funniest is definitely the hi ho, hi ho. Even more so because Shaky was the same height as you.
all those times he kept digging.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. Another five and we've got a panto.